This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's Wednesday here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We talk with Ray Fittipato as Steelers minicamp is underway, and we finally got a chance to talk to Arthur Smith, the new offensive coordinator, and much of his offensive staff. We'll talk about what we learned there, as well as what we think we're going to see as things continue to move forward and the Steelers prepare for their final days of minicamp before they take their long break before training camp. Also, we got Pirates Talk with Andrew Destin. It's going to be a fun show here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Ray Fittipato, one of our great Steelers beat writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, which you can read all of our work at post-gazette.com for everything there. You can also subscribe to this podcast and all of our podcast content on your favorite podcasting app and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all of the daily content that comes out from all of our sports writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And as always, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in Pittsburgh. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today to experience one of 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. More on them later. Ray, we got a chance to talk to Arthur Smith. It was our chance to kind of interact with him, get to ask him a lot of the questions we've had for months since they've hired him. And I thought it was interesting that he went into a few things here. But I was really intrigued by the fact that he kind of was able to shrug off the whole question about the ego of, you know, not being a head coach anymore, developing into an offensive coordinator and what he has to focus on here. There's some coaches that, you know, that you could tell they want to get back to being a head coach. They want to do it. But at least, even if it was an act, I thought Arthur Smith did a good job of kind of showing that he was focused on this new opportunity and also on what the Steelers need to do right now with the challenge in front of it.
Yeah, and did you notice how, how many connections he had to the Steelers mm-hmm. and how easy of a decision it was for him? You know, he was on vacation with his family, and he landed back in New York, and he called Mike Tomlin, and he was in Pittsburgh the next day. But even before all of that transpired, he mentioned playing for former Steeler Mike, or excuse me, coaching with former Steeler Mike Vrabel in Tennessee, Ken Wisenhunt, Mike Mularkey, Dick LeBeau. I can go on and on. He rattled off maybe 10 names of guys with Steelers connections that he's worked with in the past. So, he's been quite familiar with the Steelers for a long time. And what he said was all of those guys swear by this place. And he was excited, to get to Pittsburgh and to, experience that for himself. So, I thought, he did a good job with that as well. He knows the history of this franchise. He knows the brand of football that they want to play. It meshes with his philosophy. So, we've talked about this at length. I still think this was a really good hire for the Steelers. Now it's up to Art, in his players to get it done on the field.
Absolutely. I thought it was interesting how he talked about the strengths of the Steelers, and he said enhancing those strengths. He talked about having both Najee Harris and Jalen Warren and compared it to saying, you know, he didn't ask Derrick Henry to carry the ball 550 times. So trying to split between them and also using Cordarrelle Patterson and the strengths they have on the team. I got a chance to like chat briefly with Eddie Faulkner. And one thing that he said, he's like, hey, he's been very receptive to even the coaches that are still on the staff. And there's still quite a, they didn't dump the entire offensive staff. Eddie Faulkner's still around. Pat Meyer's still around. Alfredo Roberts is still around. So like you got a lot of different guys who still have input on the Steelers offense, who were part of the last system, who are adapting to the next system. But I think it's interesting to hear that while Arthur Smith wants to set a new tone, he wants to you know push more accountability, he's also being open to what some of the Steelers coaches and Steelers players that have been valued on the team and how he should incorporate them into his new plan.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting he mentioned Najee Harris, excuse me, Jalen Warren and Cordarrelle Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
Signed a $6 million, two-year deal to sign here as a kick returner and a running back. They did not keep three running backs last year, Chris.
Right.
Only two. So Patterson's going to have a role on this team. It's way too early to crunch numbers and figure out roster decisions. But, you know, I thought that was interesting. Patterson, you know, is going to be a part of that backfield. You know, to me, he also said, you know, paraphrasing here, but interchangeable parts, right? Guys who can play and have versatility at different positions. So you got that at the tight end position. Guys could play tight end. Connor Hayward could play H-back, fullback. So they do have a lot of versatility, you know, within that personnel group that he has to work with. And, you know, I think he's a coach in the past. If you look at the way that he's divvied up his touches at Tennessee and in Atlanta, it's been all hands on deck, right? It's not been just a guy, you know, with 1,500 receiving yards and a guy with 1,500 rushing yards. It's been very, very evenly distributed in his major stops on his coaching career as an OC and as a head coach. So, you know, that's another thing that I took, you know, from his interview yesterday.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things that he was criticized for a lot too in Atlanta, was some people didn't like his division, you know, because sometimes it meant less carries for Bijan Robinson or less targets for Kyle Pitts. And I think that's going to be part of the struggle here in Pittsburgh, is finding that rhythm on offense with the different talents that they have. You know, there's going to be people that want not more touches for Najee Harris or more touches for Jalen Warren or more touches for Pat Freiermuth or more touches for George Pickens. And those are all going to be interesting to see how he divvies that up. But, you know, another thing that I think was really interesting, and I want to keep this going into the next segment too, but I also think that it's interesting to hear, you know, we've heard from multiple players now, Isaac Seumalo, Broderick Jones, and Pat Freiermuth reiterated it yesterday, and it was that there is an increased sense of accountability in the offensive side of the ball right now, as far as not just criticizing, but also, you know, praising or acknowledging players for what they're doing right in the system. And it's interesting to hear players express an appreciation for that at this stage of things, where, again, it's just still just learning the and installing the offense.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even though they're only in shorts, I think the installation portion of this is really important, because you go back, when's the last time they had new verbiage and a new playbook? I mean, really, if you go from Todd Haley to Randy Fichtner to Matt Canada, yeah, there was some new stuff that Canada put in, but I think they kept a lot of the, you know, the key tenets of their offense, you know, from those previous coordinators. Now it's entirely, you know, different offense. And, you know, these players have been busy this spring, you know, above the shoulders, as Mike Tomlin likes to say. And I think that'll be, you know, once you get to training camp, you know, you'll add the physical portion of it. But yeah, I mean, this is an important part of the offseason. I think you see that with the attendance, right? Even on defense, Mink has been there every day. Russell Wilson on offense has been there every day. They've had really good participation. I think everyone realizes, with a lot of new faces, new strength and conditioning staff, you know, pretty much a brand new offensive staff, save for one or two guys. It was important to sort of lay that foundation this spring. I think they've done a good job of that. And now, you know, the most important part of the offseason is approaching in La Trobe. We'll see what this team is all about from a physicality standpoint once they get to St. Vincent.
Absolutely. I want to talk more about Arthur Smith and the Steelers offense and what we've learned from getting the chance to talk to some of the offensive staff here on the North Shore Drive podcast. We'll do it after this next break here on the North Shore Drive podcast. But first, I want to remind you, the show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar. If you've never been to Mike's Beer Bar, you are missing out. Why? Because this is the best bar in Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, they have over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. And they're always switching new ones in and out, so you always can get a new style of beer. And especially in the summer, there's a lot more summer beers available ready for you to try as the weather continues to heat up. But we've been getting some nice cooler weather the past week or so. Still, go to Mike's Beer Bar, experience it. They have outdoor seating, so you can sit outside and look at the great Pittsburgh skyline. You can also sit right across the street from PNC Park, and they also have over 20 televisions, so you can catch whatever sporting event that you want while you're sitting inside. They also have amazing food like steak on a stone, where you get your choice cut of steak brought to you on a heated stone. Every time you cut off a piece and press it into the stone, you choose how well done you want every single bite. It's the best bar in La Pittsburgh. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today. When you get there, tell them Chris sent you. Back here in the North Shore Drive podcast, I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Ray Fittipaldo. Ray, let's continue this conversation about Arthur Smith and what we're expecting to see of this offense. I thought, like, I want to get back to the point that you made, was the connections that he had to the Steelers over the years. And he mentioned, you know, a lot of guys with the tight. He mentioned Mike Mularkey. I mean, Mike Mularkey is a guy that, like, before Mike Tomlin, that was like the early 2000s, like the very early 2000s with Bill Cowher. He mentioned Dick LeBeau. He mentioned Deshay Townsend. A lot of ties to the team. And also, I thought it kind of showed, like, he has an understanding of where the Steelers have been when the offense worked and what, you know, what was part of that identity. Because, and I think this is something that you and I have talked about a lot, it's not just about creating the offense, right? It's not just about the schematics of the offense. He has to help revive the culture of the offense. The defensive culture has been there. You know, like we've talked about that. The defensive leaders are there. We don't know who the leaders are going to be yet. You and I presume, we talked about this, I think, on Monday. You and I presume Russell Wilson is going to be the face of this offense. He's the quarterback. He's a veteran. He's a 9-time Pro Bowl or Super Bowl champion. He's gonna be that. But this, the young core, and I asked him about Arthur Smith, about Troy Faltano and Broderick Jones and Zach Frazier. They need those guys to develop into leaders as well. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how he helps change things around and get those leaders to develop on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, it's interesting. They were building for this before even Arthur Smith got here. You know, you invest the first round pick in Broderick Jones last season. Of course, he gets here now, two more picks in the first two rounds. So they want to play that physical brand of football. And I don't know about you, Chris, maybe this is just my perception, but when I think of Arthur Smith, I always go back to Tennessee more than I do Atlanta. And in Tennessee, he had Derrick Henry. And we all know that those teams, you know, maybe it's just because they're in the AFC, you're just so familiar with that style, you know, pound the rock. Ryan Tannehill makes a couple of plays here and there. You know, you're always in games and you always have a chance to win. But I was surprised when I looked at the Falcons stats, how well they ran the ball down there. You know, he was off criticized, you know, three consecutive 7-10 seasons. But they were a top 10 rushing team in two out of his 3 years there. And the 1 year, I think it was 2 years ago, not last year, 2 or 3 years ago, Cordero Patterson had like 600 and some yards rushing.
Yeah.
As a 31-year-old running back, I think he's 33 now. So, you know, he's not going to have that type of a role in Pittsburgh, but he always manufactures the running game wherever he's been. He likes the physical brand of football that the Steelers want to play. So, yeah, he called it a perfect fit for him. And I think for the Steelers too, I think this is the type of guy they wanted. And, you know, going back to the Matt Canada hire, you know, maybe their guy wasn't there at that point, but that didn't work out. Maybe they're fine. They found their guy now. Maybe just the timing worked out this time around. I think it's a good fit for both parties.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. Like you said, like when Arthur Smith, he said he got called by Mike Tomlin while he was like traveling the world with his wife. And he was like, I wasn't going to cut my vacation short because, you know, I like my marriage. But he did say, like, you know, as soon as he got back stateside, he flew right to Pittsburgh and he knew what it was. And he said that this was the opportunity he was looking for. I think that people might be underestimating what might be able to happen here, simply because they look at, you know, how things worked out in Atlanta as an overall team. But like you said, like, you know, this is that was an offense that, you know, one, he was originally tasked with building around Matt Ryan, and then the team got rid of Matt Ryan, and then he was like, well, wait a second, that's not what I was told I was supposed to do. So he kind of had to change things up, and then he had lots of injuries to different players that kind of messed things up. And also just like the acknowledgement that things didn't exactly, you know, things are very different as a head coach to an offensive coordinator. And that's why I think that the thing about the Steelers now with Arthur Smith, you know, a lot of people are going to point to his problems in Atlanta. Again, I think that you're talking about a guy like he had a lot of things he had to tackle that weren't, you know, maybe in his wheelhouse when he was Atlanta because he was a head coach. Now he can get back to focusing on the things that he was really good at Tennessee that made him a head coaching candidate, and do so in an environment that he seems very familiar with because of all the people that he knows that have been part of the Steelers organization and the respect that he has for Mike Tomlin and the space that I think Mike Tomlin's willing to give him to do what he needs to do to make this offense work. And you're right. You brought up Cordarrelle Patterson. I think that he's going to be very much involved in this offense. And I think the running backs in general will be involved in this offense in a lot of different ways than what we've seen them, more than just handoffs or screens, but finding different ways to incorporate them in the passing game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this offense is very diverse. You know, Calvin Austin is a guy who's had a nice spring. Can Arthur Smith figure out how to use him? You know, Matt Canada couldn't figure out how to use him. He was a fourth round pick a couple of years ago. You know, guys like Scott, I think Scotty Miller and Russell Wilson have developed a nice little rapport here. As I watch practice, it seems like those guys are on the same page. So, you know, maybe a guy like Scotty Miller, that slot receiver that the Steelers really haven't had in recent years, maybe they finally get a guy like that. So, yeah, you're right. You know, the touches are going to be evenly distributed. You know, I think the running backs, I agree with you, they're going to be a big part of it. I can't wait till the trip. I can't wait to see what this looks like once pads come on. You know, first goal line drill, you know, you know, how's that going to look against that Steelers defense? I mean, it's going to be a fun summer having the Steelers finally, you know, getting back to the type of team, the type of offense that they want to be.
Yeah, indeed. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, this that, like you said, the pads going on, the physicality being tested. And you know, he talked about his excitement to be working with the young group of guys that they've drafted in Jones and Frazier and Fautanu. I think that's such an understated part of this, is that as much as we are talking about, you know, how things look in football and shorts and how things look as far as the installs and the schematics are going to depend on the physicality of this team. And Arthur Smith has to get this team to be, you know, to prove like, hey, they could be one of the more physically dominant offenses in the NFL, but they also have to do so without injuring their guys and ruining their chances to be those guys. Cause we've seen several Steelers teams over the past years, just deal with, be decimated by injuries. And I think that that's where it'll be an interesting line to see how much do they push these guys before without wearing them down as they get ready for the season.
Yeah. What was his quote yesterday? You could have the greatest play design in the world, but
yes,
it doesn't matter if you can't block it up front. And I think that's so true. You know, people get enamored of, you know, Kyle Shanahan offense and Sean McVay offense. Well, look at the resources that the 49ers have invested in the offensive line over the years.
Yep.
First round picks, you know, it's important to them, and it's finally important to the Steelers again. And, you know, one more note about that. It was about, 15 minutes with Arthur yesterday. He was asked about the number two receiver position. I thought this was very interesting. He kind of acknowledged that there's been conversations about acquiring a number two receiver, and he basically said, that's not my job responsibility. So there's been like a lot of speculation about that, but you know, that's I don't know if it was confirmed, so to speak, but if you read between the lines there, that's been a topic of conversation with the coaches and the front office. And obviously it's not going to happen before training camp. But I think once we get to training camp and you know, once, you know, these situations in San Francisco unfold with Brandon Ayuk and some other cities, I think that trade speculation is going to pop up again, because it remains the single biggest glaring weakness on this football team right now.
especially after adding Cam Sutton, you know, because we had questions about slot cornerback and cornerback overall. And now, like, those questions, they're still there a little bit, but they're a lot less loud. And now you look at the wide receiver position, and, you know, when I talked to Zach Kazani, the wide receivers coach, he admitted it was like, this was a bad day for us talking about the wide receivers, as far as he didn't like what he saw in Steelers OTAs or Steelers minicamp on Tuesday. So you're right. Yeah. The wide receiver is still a glaring need. And the fact that he kind of, you know, silently acknowledged it, but, you know, and said, hey, that's not my job. I think it's, again, it shows, hey, he's focused on what he can control right now, but yeah. I think he's very aware, like everyone else is very aware, that the Steelers could really use another playmaking wide receiver to add to this offense and truly establish the kind of balanced offense that he wants to work here in Pittsburgh. We'll be covering minicamp all week long here on the North Shore Drive podcast and at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Read all our work at post-gazette.com. Right, thanks so much for joining us. We're switching over to Pirates, talking to Andrew Destin, who's been on the road in St. Louis, where the Pirates just saw a big welcomed applause and ovation for Paul Skeens when he took the mound in St. Louis. I want to talk to Andrew about that next here on the North Shore Tribe podcast. But first, I want to remind you, this show is brought to you by Moon Township Honda. Our friends from Moon Township Honda at 5802 University Boulevard, Moon Township, PA. Visit that location and check out their website, moonhonda.com. Here's a message from them.
To build the Honda CR-V hybrid, we took everything you love about the CR-V and kicked it up a notch. With greater power for a CR-V unlike any before. Adventure confidently with Honda, car and driver's most awarded brand in 10 best history, the CR-V and CR-V Hybrid, part of the Honda line of rugged vehicles. Visit your local Honda dealer for new vehicles or arriving daily. Buy online or reserve from select Honda dealers.
We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, and we switch topics to the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are coming off a 2-1 victory over the St. Louis Cardinals in St. Louis. Covering that and the rest of this series is Andrew Destin, one of our great Pirates beat writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Andrew, how you doing?
We're thriving on this Wednesday morning. It's Wednesday, right? I want to make sure it is. We're recording a North Shore Drive podcast. I figured it had to be a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday. So, no, but all good on my end. Good to be out here in St. Louis. First time covering ball here. I've been here for hockey a few times, so all good on my end. It's good to be here, man.
Absolutely. I wanted to lead off about Paul Skeens' reception that he got in St. Louis. And St. Louis is arguably the most classic baseball town, right? Like the Cardinals are, you know, they're kind of like the Steelers of Major League Baseball. Like they're the city that's known to love baseball. They've had a lot of success. You know, they've done that there, but it seemed like there was a really big appreciation for Skeens when he took the mound in St. Louis, despite him being the pitcher for their opposing team.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I was talking to a few different Cardinals beat reporters about how attendance had kind of been waning this year. You know, after last year was really the first bad season the Cardinals have had in my lifetime, at least, where this has always been a stalwart, right? This is a franchise that is kind of a bellwether, whatever you want to call it. And that he was curious of, like, hey, Paul Skeens is here. Like, will that impact the crowd? And I believe it was about 34,000 is what they announced. So certainly short of a sellout. But the people who were there, they were into the game. It's not quite to the degree of when Paul Skeens is starting in Pittsburgh, where everybody's hanging on every pitch, you know, the home fans. But I found it really interesting just how insightful the fans were, how on top of the action they were. And when he left, the reaction to me was really interesting because it was like part reception, part like, thank God you're out of the game because now you don't have to keep mowing down our hitters. So I certainly think it was them showing their appreciation. A standing ovation, I guess you could call it that. But I thought it was also partially like there were a few fans I saw around me mimicking that were like, get out of here, go home. Like, you know, you pitched great. Let's all accept that. We're all on the same page about that. But let's see if the Cardinals can get to the Pirates bullpen, which of course they weren't. But either way, still a cool moment that I know Paul Skeens says he wasn't really aware of in the moment until he got a text message afterwards. So goes to show how locked in he was, I guess.
Absolutely. He certainly seemed locked in. He got 8 strikeouts and 6 1/3 innings, only allowed 5 hits zero runs. His ERA is now at 2.43, looking very good there. And the Pirates, you know, it's funny. I've been making this joke that whenever Paul Skenes pitches, for whatever reason, the Pirates bats waked up, and they didn't in this game. They only got 2 runs, but 2 runs was all they needed, and the bullpen held it down. What did you see from Skenes in this start? Did he add anything, or was this just more of the same of him just blazing past a lot of batters?
Yeah, saw him turn to the curveball a lot early and then often. This is a pitch that I believe coming into the game, he'd only thrown less than 4% of the time this season. And I vividly remember Mason Wynn, the leadoff hitter for the Cardinals, who probably is an all-star this year, just a tremendous shortstop for them. He got a curveball, called strike 3, and Wynn buckled like, and nothing I've seen this year from a Paul Skenes pitch. You know, some of the sliders he's made guys look silly on, or fastball, but it was a true, like, lean back out of your chair type deal and watch it drop right over the plate. The curveball by no means is Paul Skenes' best pitch, but when he has that at his disposal, when he can steal a strike with it, it makes the slider that much better. It makes the splinker that much better. The fastball can play off of it because you're kind of pitch tunneling with the two, where one is rising and one is dropping, but they look the same until about halfway to home plate. So the curveball is a really important pitch for Paul as it continues to develop, because it's not something that he's thrown a ton of. He didn't throw a ton of it in college. He did it a little bit in the minors, but it's not his top pitch. But this is as good and as much as we've seen of it, which is a really encouraging sign. And then, of course, the rest of the bullpen able to shut it down for him, which the bullpen is a fickle thing right now because you got some middle relief options that are shaky. But the back end right now is as good as it's looked all season, with Chapman starting to find his groove. Mm-hmm. Colin Holderman has been excellent all season. And David Bednar, while he gave up the solo shot, he's made 13 saves in a row. So you really can't ask for much more out of your back end, especially in such a tight game like that.
13 saves in a row and 14 on the year. Certainly seems like Bednar has found his rhythm this season. And now all of a sudden, the Pirates are sitting in second place in the NL Central. Now, granted, that's because the other four teams behind them, or three teams behind them, are now just a half game behind them, and it's just been this close cluster. But this is what you and I were talking about on the Monday episode, is that this chase for the wild card is just that there's like 7 teams in the National League right now that are all hovering around the same record, trying to fight for that last wild card spot. But I think it's another interesting sign. Like, hey, if the Pirates can figure it out, and then if they can get some more additions to the team, there is a chance for this team to be in the race, and for us to see exciting baseball when we get to August and September.
Yeah, and I think what's so interesting about this team is, you know, and I'm not breaking any news here, but when you have the starting rotation that has 3 guys in Jones, in Keller, in Skenes, like when you have those guys, you have a puncher's chance against any team. The difference is just a matter of, okay, do you have enough offense? Can you be a solid enough fielding team? And can you get those resources like middle relief pitching and expect your back end of your bullpen to be consistent? Now, I just listed a lot of questions, but some of those things have ebbed and flowed throughout the season, where they've been there or they haven't been there. Would one or two additions at the deadline be enough to remedy those issues? I'm not so sure, but the key here is that you have a distinct rotation that is probably at least top 10 in baseball. I would argue top 5. And that's something that you can't just waste. You can't throw it away. So I'm not sure how the Pirates are going to approach the trade deadline. We obviously still have about 6 weeks until then. Plenty of time for this team to show who they truly are. But in the interim, they're giving no reason for general manager Ben Charrington to do anything but support this team, go out and make a couple of pickups, and keep seeing what you have there in terms of, you know, your various options. The Pirates were very active yesterday. I believe it was on the waiver wire, trading for guys, signing minor league contracts to guys. Like, this is not for lack of trying. You can criticize the strategy of whether or not this is the right way to go about remedying the bullpen, but you can absolutely say that they recognize the window that they are sort of creeping into. This might not be the true win now window, but it's the beginning of it. And I think we're seeing the regime, the front office ownership, take that a little bit seriously.
It'll be really interesting to see how this continues. The Pirates are back out there against the Cardinals Wednesday evening, and then again Thursday afternoon, with Bailey Falter pitching tonight, and then Mitch Keller back on the mound on Thursday before they hit the road to play the Rockies the series after that. Andrew Destin's going to have that cover all way long. Andrew, any preview thoughts on what we got to see with coming up in some of these big matchups?
Yeah, I think the first one that comes to mind with me is Bailey Falter. He's one that I am very curious about because he's had a lot of success this year. He's exceeded a lot of people's expectations. And that start against the Dodgers was one away from when I thought that he, you know, would eventually get tagged for a few runs. I thought the Blue Jays were going to be the team to do it to him. But that was delayed a start until the Dodgers, they roughed him up a little. And that was really the first team that's roughed up Bailey Falter since he made his season debut against the Miami Marlins back in March. He has been excellent really all season. How does he respond from that adversity? Because the first time this season, he responded swimmingly, and I believe it was carried a no-hitter until the sixth inning against the Baltimore Orioles. I'm not expecting Bailey Falter to do that, but what do we see from him? It's going to be a hot St. Louis night. The ball's going to travel. This is a guy who pitches to soft contact, but also pitches to fly ball contact. So I'm really curious to see what the Pirates see from him. And also just the rest of the road trip. I mean, this is not a good Rockies team that's coming up shortly. It'll be both Skeens and Jones, theoretically, during that road trip. But, I mean, it's the highlights, the peaks of the pitching staff. That's what we're seeing on this road trip against two teams that are not the, you know, talk of the talk in terms of elite competition in the National League. So it's a road trip they probably need to go at least 3-3 or 4-2 on, and they got off to a good start doing that on Monday.
Certainly, you can read all about the road trip and where the Pittsburgh Pirates are going at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, post-gazette.com, where Andrew Destin is writing all the time. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us and giving us your insight. Safe travels as you continue your way covering the Pirates on the road there for the next week or so. We'll be back on Friday here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Thank you to Andrew, and thank you to Ray Fittipaldo for joining me here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We'll be back Friday with more, finishing out minicamp. What did we learn from minicamp? We talked to defensive coaches on Wednesday, and then the final practice before the Steelers take their big break before training camp happens Thursday. All that here and more, and as well as all the Pirates action, can be read about at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Thanks again for tuning into the North Shore Drive podcast. We're back Friday finishing out the week here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.